This Israel Report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. I see there are sirens sounding in the Gaza envelope as we speak.
Boker Tov, yeah. We have seen that there are sirens in the south this morning. I have no indication as yet as to what all of that means. We'll have to pick it up as we move through just to see what that means. But what I wanted to talk to listeners about this morning is just to resurrect a little bit the corner which we call Iran Check Your Mezuzahs, because there have been quite a number of very, very suspicious and coincidental activities, explosions, incidents that have happened in Iran recently. There was a report of five people being injured in a petrochemical plant explosion that happened in the area of Qom, and we know that that's one of the main focus points for Iran's nuclear development program. In addition to the Qom explosion, there was a report about a blast at a motorcycle factory in Mashhad. Now, it seems quite benign, it seems unconnected that there should be a blast at a motorcycle factory, but I did see some reports which suggested that it might not only be motorcycles that were being manufactured at this factory. And there were some reports trying to indicate that there were, in fact, even drones being manufactured at that particular factory, and hence the reason why it might have been on the radar. But also there was a massive explosion in the area of Karaj. There were some reports that said the explosion was at a cardboard factory, but I also saw a report that said that it was actually a power plant in the area of Karaj, and in fact that the explosion was so significant that it might even have registered on the Richter scale. There were reports saying that a 4-magnitude earthquake was felt in the area of Karaj. We're not quite sure whether it's linked to the explosion, which could have been at a cardboard factory, and it might have been at a power plant, but we have got lots of mixed messages coming through. So all in all, it seems as if though the Iranians are once again under some sort of spell with all of these explosions going off, all seemingly highly unconnected and coincidental, but yet still happening. So, as we say, it might be worthwhile for them to check their mezuzahs in order to try and avoid these things going on. I think the message that people are trying to send, whether they're accurate or not, is that slowly but surely, you know, there are activities that are ongoing which affect Iran's supply chain of its weapons manufacturing or its nuclear development program, and whether it be a power plant or whether it be plants that have the chemicals that they use in order to feed these processes, or whether it might be factories that manufacture parts that are used in these processes. All in all, they seem very much being on the radar somewhere, and it seems to be they seem to be targets. And I think that this is one of the strategies, potentially, if we believe that these explosions are indeed connected in some way or another to the current situation. It seems as if you know, there is a strategy to try somehow to weaken Iran from within its supply chain as much as to hit the main facilities as well.
The yesterday, Israel joined forces with the U.S. to attack targets in Yemen, and that was obviously following that missile that fell, or that actually hit near Ben Gurion Airport. So does the fact now that Israel is involved in these attacks, not only US. Does it change the picture?
Well, I'm not sure, to be honest. And, you know, my feeling is that the US has been carrying out attacks against targets in Yemen for the best part of 2 months now. And the US is pretty well equipped and they're pretty well armed. And even though this is relatively far from US territory, where, of course, they have their main base in terms of their armaments and in terms of their equipment, the amount of arms and ammunition and the a number of warships and the number of planes that they have at their disposal in the Middle East is not insignificant. The base at Diego Garcia, we understand, had been equipped and replenished, and with additional aircraft being based there. There are currently two U.S. Navy warships in the area, both of which have been used and have airplanes on board and can be launched and have been launched to attack targets in Yemen. There also is the U.S. base in Qatar, which is within distance to Yemen. So I would have thought that the U.S. firepower should have been able to take care of anything that the Houthis can present in Yemen. And yet yesterday, it was formally announced last night, and pictures released of the event, that Israel had now become involved in attacking targets in Yemen. In particular, they attacked the port of Hodeidah, the port that is well known for being used to import arms and ammunition from Iran. Also at the port of Hodeidah, we understand a concrete factory was attacked. And I'm not quite sure whether that concrete factory is again part of the supply chain supplying the weapons industry in Yemen, or supplying their ability to launch missiles towards Israel, or whether it's simply economic, trying to weaken them economically, because we understand that that concrete factory did have some economic benefit to that area. But nonetheless, Israel sent somewhere between 20 and 30 planes out yesterday afternoon, late afternoon, to attack these targets. Quite some distance for the Israeli Air Force to have to fly and to come back again and to carry out their attacks. We understand that something like 50 missiles were launched from these planes that were sent from Israel. And again, I'm not quite sure that I understand what it is that Israel adds to what the US can actually do, or whether it's just that the Israeli government doesn't necessarily subscribe to the method and the targets that the US is using as it carries out these attacks. I'm really have no idea. I mean, obviously, the report suggests that the US and Israel were fully coordinated, and it all seems to be all very well agreed that there were no arguments about Israel becoming involved. And I don't know whether it wasn't just a message from the Israeli government and from the IDF to say, if you attack our targets, then you should know that we are also here and we will also carry out attacks, and we can carry out attacks. And this is evidence of the fact that we will and can do so. And more than that, I'm really quite surprised, in a sense, that Israel became involved, because I was sure that Israel would have just allowed the US to carry on whatever they were doing. The problem, of course, is that after 2 months of these attacks being carried out, we just don't see any improvement in our situation, especially when you see the missiles that were launched the day before yesterday and how effective they were. They managed to evade the anti-missile systems that Israel has protecting its airspace. So that was a significant moment. And all of this comes after these attacks by the US and not before. So the Houthis are clearly quite well armed and still quite able to launch missiles. At what point do we get to the situation where they will no longer attack us? And it seems to me that we are not near to that point right now, especially if the Israelis are saying, let us get involved and let us try and help. It doesn't seem like the US attacks really have made any significant difference.
The fact that the one ballistic missile did make its way through, does that there was immediately a lot of talk about, well, that something in the defense system failed. There were a whole bunch of possible reasons. One of the concerns I would have is that it means that it's more sophisticated technology that can evade the defense systems. What do we know, if anything, about how that missile got through?
We don't know a great deal. My impression is that it was just another, more of the same missile that we'd been receiving up until now, with no real changes to the missile itself, but that it was just simply a failure on the part of the Israeli anti-missile defense system that allowed that missile through the cordon, whereas previously they'd been successful in intercepting these missiles. On this occasion, it was unsuccessful, and failures do happen from time to time. And of course, the media were very, very quick to jump up and say, well, one miss out of however many dozens hits there were means that, you know, the success rate is still in the high 90s, and that's not a bad thing, except the fact that one missile can change the whole complexity of the situation. All it needs is one hit. If that hit had been on the airport itself, it would have been a massively different situation than the situation that we find ourselves in now.
It certainly would have.
And it was pretty close.
Yeah, it was. It certainly would have changed my life. That is for sure. We were told, yeah, that in fact it was like 200 meters away, somewhere around there.
I mean, that is close. And that would have made a massive difference. And if the airport had been incapacitated and people had been hurt and killed and things like that in the airport, the situation that we would be in today would be massively, massively different. So I don't think it's about a difference in their missile capability. I think it's all about us making sure that we are just as accurate as we can possibly be. And sometimes there are failures, and we know that. From the Kipat Brazil, from the Iron Dome system, you know, they keep saying that there are points of failure, and we need to recognize that, even though a lot of work goes into trying to make sure that this is as secure as it possibly can be, with backup systems and all kinds of backups in place. But at the end of the day, these things can fail, and unfortunately, they do fail. And that is what we saw the day before yesterday. So for now, at least, I think that Israel is able to operate against Yemen in the way that it has been, against the Houthis rather than against Yemen, but against the Houthis in Yemen. I think that we just need to revise what's going on and revise the situation from our protection point of view, and also try to understand whether there are targets that can be more pinpoint in terms of incapacitating the Houthi ability to fire missiles towards Israel, because I mean that's clearly got to be the main target, I would think.
I would as well. Israel's security cabinet has approved a plan for the next stage of the operation in Gaza. So what are the main components of this plan?
Yeah, so this is a very significant decision. And yet, you know, the question is this kind of the moment that Israel says we are now going in to absolutely and finally annihilate Hamas, or maybe not? And I think that the complexity within all of this is, of course, the hostages. And one of the things that is noticeable in the rhetoric that comes out of the Israeli government is that they talk about defeating Hamas. When you hear statements coming out from the army says their main objective is to rescue the hostages. And so the two objectives don't seem to be aligned. And yet, maybe they are aligned, because maybe defeating Hamas means we will have our hostages back, and maybe rescuing the hostages means effectively defeating Hamas. The problem is that I don't think that the Israeli government can decide right now to go all out against Hamas in a way that will risk the lives of the hostages even more than they're at risk at the moment. I think that that would not go down very well. And so therefore, I've seen one analysis which says that this is not the final push to annihilate Hamas, but it's kind of the semi-final scenario in which the hostages hopefully will not be more harmed. Israel has made a statement saying that if hostages are not released within the next 2 weeks, this new plan goes into action. And the main components of the plan involve the following. First of all, moving the civilian population to the south part of the Gaza Strip, south of the Morag Corridor, to be located between the Morag Corridor and the Egyptian border. And somehow they're going to have to find a way to make sure that the people who are moved into that area are all checked before they move in, so that we can effectively create what we would call a clean area with no Hamas terrorists embedded within that civilian population in the south of Gaza. I'm not exactly sure how that can be achieved, because we know how Hamas is very adept at embedding their terrorists within the civilian areas, but the idea is to move civilians only to the southern part of the Morag Corridor, and then to call up to 300,000 reserve troops. And that call-up process has already begun, to call up reservists to come in and for them to be ready to go into Gaza and to slowly but surely clean out the northern part of Gaza, the area north of the Morag Corridor, in order to somehow finally kill Hamas's capabilities off, and to hopefully also release our hostages in the process. Now, again, I'm not sure. I think that the tactic for now is still to try to somehow pressurize Hamas to come to an agreement, rather than to think that militarily we can go in and somehow release the hostages in a military operation. I think that there is still a significant fear that any attempts to get to the hostages in a military operation will effectively risk their lives. And we've already seen some of our hostages killed because their captors understood that the idea for getting closer by to the area in which they were being held. So there's still a significant concern about that. But there will be this push, and there is a decision that has been taken by the Security Cabinet to change things that are in Gaza. We've seen pressure building in Gaza last week. There are reports of Hamas attacking food warehouses to take food for themselves. So clearly there's a certain level of pressure that's building. We've seen President Trump come out say that the US would like to allow humanitarian aid into Gaza, but not give it to Hamas. Hamas is stopping that from happening. Part of the Israeli Security Cabinet decision yesterday was indeed to allow humanitarian aid into Gaza, but for it to be distributed by non-Hamas, non-Gaza entities. So quite a number of different elements are going into this mix, which creates a certain level of confusion. And I think that time will tell as to how all of this clears itself out.
Indeed it will. Anthony Rach, thank you as always. We'll catch Anthony tomorrow morning at 7:45 with the Israel Report.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.